Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 76.
So Wukong is inside the eldest demon king's belly. You can imagine the chaos he's causing. The text says the demon is initially unconscious and silent from the pain, right? But then he wakes up and is pretty understandably just begging for mercy.
And what's really striking is Wukong's first move. Even from inside, the demon yells out this super respectful title, great benevolent, great sage, equal to heaven, bodhisattva, you know, desperate. But Wukong, he just cuts him off, mocks him. Son, don't waste your breath. Save a few words. Just call me son, old grandfather.
Huh, that's classic Wukong.
It is, but it's not just playful, right? It's a calculated humiliation. It's about immediately dismantling the demon's authority, establishing psychological control right from the gut, literally.
And the demon, desperate, with that ant-like desire to live, he actually does it. Starts calling him old grandfather, offers to escort Tong Sang over the mountain, just wants Wukong to spare his life. It's total capitulation, instantly.
Yeah, it speaks volumes about Wukong's reputation, doesn't it? Even trapped inside, his legend precedes him. The demon knows he's outmatched, not just physically, but mentally, too. He's willing to ditch his dignity just to survive.
Then comes the offer.
Right, and it's interesting. No gold, no silver, no jewels. Claims he doesn't have any. Instead, something practical. His three brothers will carry Tang Sang in a fragrant rattan sedan.
A ride for the master. And Wukong actually finds this more appealing than treasure. He agrees to come out.
But, oh, here comes the twist.
Exactly. Just as Wukong's getting ready to emerge, the third demon, the sneaky one, whispers to the eldest.
What does he say?
Tells him, big brother, when he comes out, bite down. Chew the monkey to pieces. Swallow him. Then you won't be tormented anymore. Nasty stuff.
And this is where Wukong's foresight is just crucial. That trust but verify approach. He's still inside, right? And he hears it all.
He doesn't just pop out.
No way. He tests him. He uses his golden hoop rod, the Jingu Bang, pokes it out of the demon's mouth first, like a little probe.
And the demon falls for it completely, bites down hard.
Crack.
Yeah, the text gives us that sound. Daicha! His own front teeth shattering against the magic rod. Ouch.
Oh, definitely ouch. Wukong then pulls the rod back in.
And with perfect timing calls him out. You tried to trick me, you liar.
Declares he's staying inside now. Double ouch.
Yeah, the eldest demon's left groaning, right? Complaining about his broken teeth, the pain, blaming the third demon for the terrible advice. It's an immediate physical consequence for their little betrayal attempt, reinforces Wukong's total control.
So round one of trying to trick Wukong, massive failure, broken teeth, Wukong still inside, still in charge, but the demons aren't done. The third brother, he cooks up a new plan. A provocation.
Ah, the psychological approach now.
Yep. He starts yelling, challenging Wukong, calls him a junior monkey, even though he knows Wukong's reputation, you know, the whole South Heaven Gate Hall of Divine Mists stuff.
Right. This is the Jiangfa tactic, trying to wile him up, plant his pride. He basically dares Wukong to come out and fight like a quote unquote hero instead of doing things inside someone's belly.
He's booking the bear, or well, the monkey.
Yeah.
Trying to bait him out of his safe spot.
And Wukong, you know, he's clever, but he is still the monkey king. He's got that pride. He actually considers it, thinks, yeah, okay, I could just kill him from inside, easy, but it would damage my name and reputation.
His brand matters.
It does. So he accepts the challenge, but crucially on his own terms. He demands a wide place for the fight, says the cave entrance is too narrow for his household weapons.
Clever. He's dictating the terms of engagement even while accepting the challenge. And the demons.
They fall for it again. They think they're setting him up. They gather this huge army, like 30,000 monsters.
30,000?
Yeah, all armed with sharp weapons. They set up this big three talents array formation outside the caves, just waiting to ambush Wukong when he comes out. They think they finally have him cornered.
They really underestimate him, don't they? Even after the teeth incident?
Constantly. But Wukong, he hears all the commotion outside. He hears the weapons, the arranging. He knows it's a trap.
Of course. Wide open space. Huge army. They already tried to bite him. He's not just going to walk into that.
So what does he do? This is where it gets really ingenious.
Yeah, this is peak Wukong strategy. Mm. He comes up with a plan for, like, the best of both worlds. He'll exit, sure, but he's not giving up his leverage. Not a chance.
He plucks a single hair from his tail, blows on it, transforms it into a rope.
Just a single hair?
Yep. Only as thick as a hair, the text says. But get this, 40 zhang long. That's huge. Over 400 feet, and he says it'll get thicker in the wind.
Wow. Okay, magic to air rope. What does he do with it?
This is the masterstroke. He ties one end very carefully around the demon's heart and liver.
Oof. Inside.
Inside, with a sliplock knot, special kind of knot, right? Only tightens when you pull it from the outside.
So it's like a remote control for pain.
Basically, he explains his plan. If the demon behaves, escorts the master, fine, no problem. But if they try to fight...
He doesn't even need to fight them for long.
Exactly. He just gives the rope a little tug. Game over.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So he's got his insurance policy set up. How does he get out now?
He makes himself tiny, starts climbing up towards the demon's mouth. But then he pauses.
What stops him?
He sees the demon's teeth. Remember the ones that didn't break? Described as steel teeth like sharp blades. He realizes, okay, maybe the mouth is still too risky. Even with the rope.
Good point. Don't want to get accidentally chewed on the way out.
Right. So, quick thinking again. He chooses a new exit. The toothless place. The nostril.
No, seriously. He climbs up through the palate into the nasal cavity. The demon's nose starts to itch uncontrollably.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Big inhale. And then a massive sneeze just blows Wukong right out.
Ha! He gets sneezed out. That's amazing.
Talk about an exit strategy. So Wukong's finally out in the open air.
And he immediately goes big, right? Transforms.
Yep. Grows to 3 zhang tall, huge, holding that magic rope in one hand, his iron rod in the other, ready for business.
And the Demon King, still clueless about the rope inside him.
Completely clueless. He just sees Wukong appear and charges, swinging his blade. The other two brothers jump in too, one with the spear, one with that G-pole arm.
So it's 3-on-1 plus the army waiting. Looks like it. Wukong fends them off for a moment with his rod. But then, another strategic shift.
What now?
He drops the rope in, drops his rod, leaps up into the clouds, and flies off to a nearby open mountain peak.
Looks like he's retreating. But knowing Wukong?
It's totally calculated. He gets some distance, clear line of sight, then he grabs that rope end again and pulls.
Mm.
Hard.
Ooh, the heart pain.
Instantly, the eldest demon clutches his chest, stumbling. Wukong gives it another massive yank.
Yala?
The demon just plummets out of the sky, falls like a spinning wheel, the text says. Lands so hard, he makes a 2-foot deep pit in the solid earth.
Wow. Talk about demonstration of power. And completely remote.
The other two demons see this. Naturally, they freaked out. They rush down, grab the rope themselves, the part hanging out, and immediately kneel down, begging Wukong for mercy.
But they still try a little insult, don't they? Even while begging.
They do. Call him rat-bellied and snail-gutted, like small-minded, despite his reputation for being generous. They blame him for tying the rope to their brother's heart.
The nerve. After trying to bite him and ambush him.
Wukong calls them out on it immediately. Impertinence, he says. Reminds them they tried to bite him. They set up 30,000 demons to ambush him. Says fighting one against so many is... illogical.
He's got a point.
He threatens to just drag the eldest demon, pit and all, straight to his master, Teng Seng.
That gets their attention, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Total desperation now, kowtowing again, begging for their lives, promising anything. They'll escort the master. Really, they will this time.
So Wukong has them exactly where he wants them.
Completely. And he even plays with them a little.
Yeah.
Suggests, hey, why don't you just cut the rope?
Knowing full well.
Knowing full well, the eldest cries out, no. Cutting the outside rope won't help. The pain's from the knot inside my heart and throat. Confirms Wukong's total control.
It's like checkmate.
Pretty much. Wukong then offers, maybe a bit mischievously, to go back inside to untie it.
And the demon must have panicked. No, don't come back in.
Exactly. Terrified Wukong won't leave a second time. So Wukong reassures him, nah, I can untie it from out here. He just gets their absolute promise one more time. You will escort my master safely.
And they agree, presumably, very quickly.
Instantly. So then, the big reveal. Wukong just shook his body, the text says, and poof, the hair rope vanishes. The pain stops immediately.
So it was the hair itself, retracting the magic.
Yeah, it was his disguise method. The hair formed the rope, tied the knot, caused the pain. When he recalled the hair, the whole thing just ceased to exist. No actual knot left inside. Pure magic and manipulation.
Incredible. And the demon's reaction.
Total relief and submission. They leap up, thank him profusely, promise again to get their stuff and carry Teng Seng in the sedan. They send their whole army home and head back to the cave completely defeated.
Teng Seng, the master, he's literally crying. Total despair, rolling on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Total brace down.
Meanwhile, Pigsy and Sandy, they're just dividing the luggage, like untying it, figuring out who gets what. They're completely convinced Wukong's been eaten.
It's quite a picture, isn't it? Pigsy is so sure, just declares, eaten whole by the demon. Done deal.
So quick.
Yeah.
And then, bam, Wukong just drops out of the
clouds. Right out of the clouds.
No fanfare. Just calls out, Master! And then immediately whack. Slaps Pigsy so hard he gets real.
Yeah. No hugs, no glad you're okay. Just instant payback. And it's Sandy who has to immediately jump in, basically calls him a ghoul, a coffin pedestal, for, you know, writing Wukong off so fast.
So that tells you something right there.
Oh, absolutely. It highlights Pigsy's, well, his very practical, maybe self-serving side, and maybe this undercurrent of resentment towards Wukong, compared to Sandy, who's more loyal, maybe a bit resigned, but still focused on the group.
It's like you see their core personalities instantly.
Exactly. It's that constant internal conflict bubbling up.
So what's he saying there? It's more than just being mad, right?
Oh, definitely. It's Wukong reasserting himself, like, you forgot who I am and what I can do. He's punishing Pigsy, sure. But he's also correcting this fundamental underestimation of his value to the whole mission.
It's like he constantly has to prove himself, even to his own team.
Precisely. It shows that even for someone indispensable like Wukong, you have to manage perceptions, not just get the job done. Especially when there's cynicism from inside.
And the story of how he escaped. It's just wild. So Tank Sanzang is obviously relieved, bowing to Wukong, saying, you know, I would have perished if I believed Pigsy.
Total relief.
But Wukong, he's not finished with Pigsy. He just keeps laying into him, calls him a useless lump of lazy good-for-nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just Wukong being, well, Wukong? Or is there more to it?
I think there's definitely a deeper layer. It really underlines that tension within the group. Wukong's constant jabs aren't just personal insults. They're almost like leadership through irritation.
Trying to shape him up.
Yeah, trying to make Pigsy take the journey seriously, understand the stakes, maybe push him to be better, even if it's through insults.
Okay, so speaking of things not being over, let's shift scenes. Inside the demon's cave now, the three demon brothers are regrouping after the oldest one got, well, pretty badly beaten by Wukong.
Right. And the second brother is furious.
At his own brother.
Yeah. He's blaming the eldest for swallowing Wukong in the first place. He's like, he was small. We could have just jumped him outside.
Huh. Interesting tactical point.
It really is. He argues that swallowing Wukong actually gave him the advantage, let him cause all that internal chaos. It's a great lesson, you know? Don't underestimate your opponent's weird skills. It can backfire badly.
And then the second demon reveals something huge that promised the eldest maid to carry Tang Sanzang.
Total lie. A complete fabrication.
He just admits it.
Flat out. Says it was all fake, truly, for Big Brother's life, just to save himself.
Wow. So the demons aren't just strong, they're tricky.
Mm.
And maybe not that loyal to each other when push comes to shove.
Exactly. It shows you how things work in the demon realm. Survival often trumps everything else, even family ties. And then the second demon, he demands 3,000 little demons to go capture Wukong.
3,000?
Yeah. So he recognizes Wukong's individual power, but he thinks overwhelming numbers are the way to go. It sets up a totally different kind of fight. Not one-on-one, but like a mass assault.
Okay, back to the pilgrims.
Mm.
A blee flag bearer shows up with this challenge from the demons.
Mm-hmm.
And Pigsy, what does he do? He laughs. Right away, he questions Wukong's claim from before about having subdued the demon.
Predictable Pigsy, right? He's like, oh yeah, if you subdued him, why are they back challenging us now?
Is he just being cynical again? Or does he really not get it?
Probably a bit of both, you know? Pigsy often sees things through his own lens of limitations and maybe fear. He doesn't quite grasp Wukong's strategic thinking.
But Wukong understands.
Yeah, Wukong gets it. He clarifies, look, the first demon, the eldest, he's genuinely terrified now. Hearing the name Sun gives him a headache, he says. But this new challenge, that's the second brother. He refuses to accept the defeat. It's about his pride, a different motivation entirely.
Okay, and this is where Wukong gets clever, or maybe manipulative.
You could say that.
He tries this psychological angle on Pigsy, points out the demon's brotherly loyalty, even though we know it's shaky, and suggests, hey, maybe we three brothers should show some virtue like that.
Appealing to his sense of righteousness, yeah.
And then suggests Pigsy should be the one to fight the second demon.
So the big question, is Wukong genuinely trying to inspire him? Or is this a total setup from the beginning?
Knowing Wukong.
It's hard to believe it's not a setup, right? Wukong knows Pigsy. He knows his vanity, his desire to look good, but also his fundamental cowardice. He often uses Pigsy's flaws for a larger purpose, sometimes for the mission, sometimes just to teach him a lesson.
And Pigsy totally bites. He agrees to fight, but then he asks to borrow Wukong's rope.
Magic rope, yeah.
And specifically wants to tie it around his own waist as a life-saving rope. He wants Wukong and Sandy to hold the other end, ready to pull him back if things go south.
It's peak Pigsy, isn't it? It shows that deep down fear, that reliance on others to bail him out, even while he's trying to act all brave.
He wants the glory without the real risk.
Exactly. That life-saving rope is like a perfect symbol for his whole attitude.
And Wukong. The text says he secretly laughs.
Mm-hmm.
He agrees, but inside he's planning to play a trick on Pigsy.
Uh-oh. You just know this isn't going to end well for him.
Not at all. So Pigsy goes out, challenges the demon, acts all tough.
Puts on a show.
But it lasts, what, 7 or 8 rounds?
Yeah.
And his arms get tired and he starts yelling.
Brother, I'm in trouble. Pull. Pull the life-saving rope.
The moment of truth.
Yeah.
It crumbles pretty fast. Shows the gap between how he talks and how he fights.
8 times.
And Wukong. What does he do? Does he pull?
Nope. He does the exact opposite. He loosens the rope and throws it away.
Throws it away.
Yeah. So Pigsy, who's trying to run away at this point, starts tripping over the loose rope, falls on his heel, then bam, face first in the dirt.
Oh, man. Pure slapstick. It's almost funny, but the consequences.
Furious. Yeah, it's humiliating. The demon just grabs him by the nose, rolls him up like a dragon, apparently,
yeah,
and carries him off triumphantly back to the cave.
So Wukong orchestrates this total public humiliation. What's the point? What does this achieve for him or for the mission?
It's Wukong's version of tough love, cranked up to 11. It's a harsh lesson. Maybe the idea is that some lessons, especially about the seriousness of their journey, can only be learned through, well, painful direct experience, not just words.
A lesson in commitment, maybe? Not just fighting?
Could be. A lesson about relying on yourself, perhaps? Or just understanding the real danger they're in?
Okay, so Tang Sanzang witnesses all this. Pigsy getting dragged off after Wukong ditched the rope. How does he react?
Oh, he's furious. Absolutely outraged at Wukong.
Blames him directly.
Immediately. Accuses him of lacking mutual affection. Basically saying he's jealous and spiteful. He demands to know why Wukong didn't pull the rope. Why he let Pigsy get captured.
Yeah, that seems like a fair question from his perspective. It feels like that classic conflict, right?
Yeah.
Compassion versus maybe a more ruthless approach.
It is. And Wukong characteristically just laughs it off. He turns it back on the master, accusing him of excessive protectiveness and partiality.
Partiality? How so?
Wukong points out the difference. He says, look, when I get captured, you don't seem too worried. You kind of see me as, well, maybe expendable or at least capable of getting myself out.
Mm.
But the second, Pigsy's in trouble. You're immediately upset, blaming me. It raises that interesting point about leadership bias, doesn't it? How you react differently based on who's in trouble.
Yeah, that's a really sharp observation from Wukong. So what's his justification for letting Pigsy get caught?
His rationale is pretty blunt. Pigsy needs to suffer some hardship. He needs to really understand how difficult this whole scripture fetching journey is. It's education through suffering, basically.
Harsh. But maybe effective in Wukong's view.
That seems to be his philosophy here.
But Tang Sanzang pushes back, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't just accept that.
No, he has a counter argument. And it's actually quite nuanced. He says, look, it's not that I didn't worry about you, Wukong. It's that I trusted your abilities. You can transform. You can escape. You can handle yourself.
Oh, okay.
Pigsy, on the other hand, he's clumsy. He can't transform like that. So when he gets caught, the danger feels much more real, much more immediate.
That makes sense. It's not just favoritism. It's like assessing the actual risk based on the individual's skills.
Exactly. It's about adjusting your approach based on who you're dealing with. A key part of managing any team, really. Understanding individual strengths and weaknesses.
So after all that arguing, the accusations, the justifications, what happens?
Well, despite the back and forth, despite the tough love lesson, Wukong agrees to go save Pigsy.
Baji.
Ah.
He's been captured.
Yeah, not looking great for him.
And you'd think, okay, Monkey King, Wukong, he's the hero. He'll just swoop in. But it's Wukong. There's always a twist, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. He is racing to the rescue, but he's also holding on to some stuff, some resentment towards Baji.
Resentment, like what?
Oh, he remembers Baji cursing him before, you know, and pushing the master to use that tight-fitting headband spell. The Jingzu.
Right, that painful one.
Yeah, and Baji was always the one saying, let's just split up, let's go home. So Wukong's not feeling super sympathetic right at this moment.
Oh, okay. That changes things.
Yeah.
So with that simmering resentment, what does he do? He doesn't just charge in?
No, no. He decides to let Baji suffer a little first. It's quite something. He transforms himself into this tiny charred locust, or cicada, Guachong.
Charred cicada.
Yeah, and he attaches himself stealthily to Baji's ear, just hitches a ride right into the demon's cave with him.
Wow, so he's just listening in, observing.
Exactly, the ultimate fly on the wall. Or cicada on the ear, I guess.
So what does he see? What happens to Baji in the cave?
Well, the second demon general brings Baji to the old demon. And the old demon's first reaction is basically, oh, he's useless.
Huh. Does Baji try to use that?
Oh, totally. He's like, yeah, useless. Just let me go. But then the third demon general pipes up and says, wait, that's Pigsy, Tang Monk's disciple.
Uh-oh. So plan B for the demons.
A much worse plan B.
Yeah.
They decide to tie him up, all four limbs tied together, saying Quan Ti, and then toss him in a pond.
A pond? Why?
To soak him. Soak him until his hair falls off. Then they plan to gut him, salt him, dry him.
Good grief.
And save him for, and this is the quote, when it's cloudy, for drinking.
Tianjian Siyu. For drinking, like with drinks. That's horrifyingly specific. Baji must be freaking out.
Oh, he's terrified. He yells out something like, I've run into a demon who sells preserved meat. Zhuang Jianafan Yande Yu Gua Yu. And boom, into the pond he goes. Half floating, half sinking.
And Wukong, watching all this from the air.
He finds it hilarious, seriously. He sees Baji floating there, snout sticking out, and compares him to a large black lotus pod after a frost. Da Hai Liang Peng!
Wow, that really shows his mischievous side, maybe even a cruel streak.
It's that mix, isn't it? Loyalty, yes, but also mischief, vindictiveness. He's complicated. He's definitely enjoying Baji's predicament.
So he's amused, but the description says he also feels pity mixed with hatred. No. And then he remembers something. A light bulb moment.
Yeah, exactly. Amidst all this, he suddenly recalls Sha Monk mentioning that Baji had some private savings.
Sifang?
Private savings. Baji. Interesting.
Right. And that thought shifts things for Wukong. He decides, okay, time to actually mess with him directly now, not just watch.
Ah, here we go. What's the plan? He uses a fake voice, sort of deep and spooky, I imagine, and calls out Baji's formal Buddhist name, Zhu Wuneng.
Ooh, that would be startling. Nobody uses that name out here.
Exactly. Baji's totally confused, wondering who could possibly know that name in this awful demon cave pond.
So Wukong reveals himself.
Not quite. He keeps up the act. He says he's a soul collector, Gusiren, sent by the fifth king of hell, Yan Wang.
A soul collector? Oh, Baji must be absolutely terrified now.
Completely. He immediately starts trying to bargain. Hey, Mr. Soul Collector, could you tell the king of hell? You know, he and my buddy Wukong are tight. Maybe just give me one more day. He's desperate.
But Wukong's not having it, is he? He throws out that famous line.
Oh, yeah, the classic. If the king of hell decrees death at third watch, who dares keep them till fourth watch? Yan Wang Zuding Sangong Sui Ginyu Renda Sigang sends chills down your spine, right?
Definitely. So Baji tries another angle.
He pleads a bit more, says he still wants to live, but then he has this ridiculous idea. Hey, why don't you wait until my master and Wukong get captured, too? Then we can all, you know, settle up together.
Seriously. Even in terror, he's thinking like that. Wukong must be loving this.
Oh, absolutely. He's probably trying hard not to laugh. But he plays along, offers this fake deal, says he has like 30 other souls to collect nearby, so maybe he can delay Baji's soul collection for a day. If Baji can offer some travel expenses. A bribe, basically. Punch on.
A bribe for the soul collector.
Yeah.
Okay, this is peak absurdity. Does Baji fall for it?
Well, first he tries the whole I'm just a poor monk, I have nothing routine. But Wukong threatens him with the life-taking rope, zooming a shing.
The pressure's on.
And Baji cracks. He admits, okay, he does have some money.
Ah, the private savings. How much did he squirrel away?
He says he managed to save up 5 mace of silver, got it from pious households who gave him extra because he ate so much.
Because he ate so much, of course.
But then he complains he took it to get melted down and some dodgy silversmith skims some off, leaving him with only 4 mace 6 fen.
Huh. Even now, he's complaining about being ripped off. So specific. 4 May 6 Fen. Where is it? Wukong points out he's not even wearing pants.
And this is the best part. Baji reveals the hiding spot. It's stuffed in his left ear. Zizong Jum Ying Ner Saizli.
Wait, what? In his ear? His ear?
In his ear. I mean, you couldn't make it up.
This is incredible. So Wukong checks.
He does. Reaches into Baji's ear, which must have been weird, and pulls out this actual little saddle-shaped silver ingot Nyerianzi. Weighs about 4 mace, 5 or 6 fen, just like Baji said.
He actually had silver hidden in his ear.
He really did. And the moment Wukong pulls it out and sees it, He just can't hold it in anymore. He bursts out laughing loudly.
And the jig is up?
Completely up. That laugh is unmistakable.
So Baji, hearing this, stuck in the pond, he must realize immediately who's been tormenting him.
Instantly. And he is furious, starts cursing Wukong from the water, calling him that old insult, cursed stable manager, Tian Sha de Bimwen, you know, yelling about being extorted while he's practically drowning.
The nerve. But Wukong gives it right back, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He mocks Baji. Look at you, saving up private cash while I'm out here risking everything, getting headaches from that headband spell, protecting the master. It really throws their dynamic into sharp relief again.
That constant friction. And Baji actually defends the money.
He does. Claims he scraped it from between his teeth. Yakshanguafialida says it wasn't even for food. It was to buy fabric for new clothes.
New clothes. While on a divine pilgrimage.
Oh, Baji. And then he actually asks for some of it back. Can you believe it? Wukong's response is basically, not a chance. Not even half a fen.
Classic Wukong. So after all that, Baji finally just gives up and asks for help.
Pretty much. He resigns himself, swallows his pride, and just begs Wukong to save him.
And Wukong agrees. Finally.
Yeah, the prank's over. He's got the money. So he hides the silver, changes back to his normal form, uses his staff to hook Baji closer,
right,
lifts him out by his feet, unties him. Baji's soaking wet, probably freezing, legs all numb.
And his first thought is?
His first thought is, let's sneak out the back door. Homen. The easy way out.
But Wukong's not having that, is he?
Nope. Wukong immediately scolds him. The back door. Is that progress? Is that how heroes act? We're going out the front door.
Always pushing for the harder, more righteous path. Even now.
Exactly. Baji complains his legs are numb, but Wukong just tells him to get moving and follow. It's just perfectly them, isn't it? That whole interaction encapsulates the entire relationship, their whole journey, in a nutshell.
Wow.
Wukong and Baji, they're fighting their way out of the lion camel cave.
Right. Baji's probably still a bit dazed.
Shaking it off, yeah. And he gets his iconic rake back. The source says they fought through 3 or 4 layers of doors.
Just laying waste to countless minor demons as they go. Imagine the chaos.
And the reaction from the top demons.
Oh, it's immediate.
Yeah.
Very telling. The old demon, he hears all this commotion and boom, straight away alerts the second demon.
Tells him Wukong's busted Baji out and they're wrecking the place.
Exactly. So this isn't just, you know, a random scuffle. It's a direct challenge right in their stronghold.
It evokes a pretty furious response then.
Oh, yeah. An immediate pursuit by that second demon. It really speaks to the hierarchy and the quick reaction time within those demonic ranks.
So that sets up this spectacular confrontation right outside the cave entrance.
Mm-hmm. The second demon comes out. He's got a spear. Wukong meets him. Trusty iron staff ready.
And the description of the fight is just incredibly vivid. The spear moves like a penetrating forest python.
While Wukong's staff rises like a sea emerging dragon. I mean, you can almost see the clash, can't you?
Sure.
And stepping back for a second, you know, for the bigger picture, the source is very clear. The second demon, he's the yellow-toothed old elephant.
Ah, okay.
And he's specifically formed this brotherhood with the Lion King with one goal. Capture Tang San Zhang and, well, eat him.
So this fight isn't just random violence. It's actually critical for the whole pilgrimage.
Absolutely critical. Their survival hangs on this. And what's really interesting here is Baji's role, or lack thereof.
What does he do?
He just watches, stands there, rake upright, not joining in at all.
Really? While Wukong's in this intense duel.
Yep. Quite a contrast to Wukong's, you know, ferocity.
So how does this tension actually play out in the battle itself? What happens next?
Well, the yellow-toothed old elephant, he sees Wukong is pretty skilled with that staff, so he tries his signature move.
What? Jeez.
Wrapping Wukong up with his powerful trunk, like an elephant does.
Okay, makes sense.
But Wukong, he's always thinking ahead, ever cunning. He anticipates it, positions his staff horizontally.
Ah, to protect his hands, stop them getting trapped.
Exactly. Smart move.
So the demon gets frustrated.
Yeah, pretty much. He manages to wrap Wukong's waist and hips, but crucially, his hands are still free.
Huh. That seems like a bit of an oversight for the demon.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Maybe overconfidence? Or perhaps it's just, you know, the narrative highlighting Wukong's incredible nimbleness. Hard to say for sure.
And then Wukong does something odd.
Very odd. He starts playfully playing with his staff on the demon's nose.
Playing with it on its nose while wrapped up. That's unexpected, even for Wukong. What is going on there?
Exactly. It's truly bizarre. But it sets the stage perfectly for this really surprising turning point.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What happens?
Well, remember Baji? standing there watching.
The spectator, yeah.
Suddenly he has this aha moment, like a light bulb goes off.
Seriously, Baji.
Yeah. He starts lamenting, you know, how the demon had totally tied him up earlier, completely incapacitated him.
Right.
But now he sees Wukong, hands are free, and he blurts out that Wukong could just, thrust the staff into the demon's nostril.
Wait, Baji comes up with that, the same Baji who's just standing there. That's quite a turnaround.
Isn't it? It's a key insight, and it comes from arguably the most unexpected source in that moment.
Wow.
Baji, often shown as, you know, clumsy or lazy, he provides the exact tactical advice Wukong needs right then.
And Wukong hears him?
Oh, yeah. He's inspired, takes his staff, shrinks it down, tiny, like a chicken's egg.
Okay.
Then expands it again, boom, over a Vang Long. That's what, about 11 feet, roughly 3.3 meters.
Huge.
And just like Baji suggested, he plunges it right into the demon's nostril.
Ow. Okay. The effect was
immediate and dramatic, excruciating pain for the demon.
I bet. So he lets Wukong go.
Instantly releases him.
Yeah.
And Wukong, quick as ever, cleverly grabs the demon's nose.
Grabs its nose.
Yep. And using all his might, pulls it forward. So this massive yellow-toothed old elephant, totally subdued now, is forced to follow Wukong like a common animal being led.
Incredible. And where's Baji in all this?
It's only now that Baji finally decides to join the fray. Raises his rake, ready to strike.
About time.
But here's another interesting point. Wukong stops him.
Stops him? Why?
He warns Baji, look, those sharp teeth on your rake, they might break the demon's skin, cause bleeding.
And the master wouldn't like that.
Exactly. Their master, Tang Sanzang, would disapprove of causing that kind of injury, even to a demon they just fought.
So the instruction is clear.
Use the rake handle, not the sharp teeth. Wukong's restraint here, even now, it's driven by Sanzang's core ethical principles. Shows how deep their mission's values run, doesn't it? Even right in the heat of, post-battle.
It really does. So it creates this kind of comical image then.
Completely. Wukong leading this huge demon by the nose and Baji trotting along behind, whacking it with his rake handle.
Like two elephant slaves, as the text says, guiding their charge down the slope.
Exactly that.
So they get down the slope and Tang Sanzang is there waiting anxiously.
Mm-hmm. And when he sees Wukong pulling this enormous creature along by the nose, first he's just confused.
I can imagine.
But then, once he understands what's happened, he bursts into laughter.
Laughter, okay.
But his reaction right after that is pivotal. He immediately shows his profound compassion.
How so?
He asks straight away, would the demon willingly escort them over the mountain? You know, help them on their journey.
He asks the demon that just tried to capture them.
Yep. And he declares, if it agrees, its life should be spared.
Wow. That's quite something.
It is. This act of mercy, even towards an enemy like this, you see, it isn't weakness. It's actually maybe a powerful strategic choice.
Right.
It served the pilgrimage's greater purpose.
So who conveys this offer?
Xia Wujing relays the master's message to the demon.
And the demon, still in agony, presumably.
Oh, yeah. Still in pain, speaking with this muffled voice. The text says, like a severe cold.
Yeah.
But it eagerly agrees, yes, yes, I'll carry the palanquin if you just spare me.
Understandable.
So Wukong grants the reprieve, but with a very stern warning. Don't even think about backing out. No reneging. There won't be a second chance.
Fair enough.
And the demon bows in gratitude and goes off to prepare.
And what about Baji Willy? How's he feeling after all this, especially after his delayed contribution?
Ah, Baji. The source tells us he's left feeling ashamed beyond measure.
Ashamed.
Yeah. At his earlier passivity, you know, just standing there watching. It's presented as a clear consequence, right? His limited contribution compared to Wukong's quick thinking and then the master's, transformative mercy. He feels pretty small. The second demon, and he's heading back to his cave, Lion Camel Cave.
Right. But even before he arrives, the word's already out among the little demons. They're buzzing with this news that Sun Wukong had him by the nose, literally.
You can just imagine the panic.
Oh, absolutely. The great demon and the third demon, the leaders, they hear this and they are just terrified. They're expecting the absolute worst retribution.
Yeah, they think Wukong's coming for them.
Exactly. And that fear, that initial terror, it's really key because it shapes everything that happens next. It forces them to shift strategy completely.
But then comes the twist. The second demon gets back and tells his story. He talks about Tang Monk's compassion, sure, but crucially,
He describes Sun Wukong's benevolence. That's the word used.
Benevolence from Wukong.
I know, right? And the reaction from the other two big demons, they're just stunned, dumbfounded, the text says. They dared not speak.
Wow.
And the great demon even kind of admits Wukong's power. He says, you know, Wukong could have easily killed him back when he was trapped inside Wukong's belly.
Right. Or just crushed the second demon's nose right then and there.
Exactly. So this mix of like total fear followed by this completely unexpected report of benevolence, that becomes the crucial misunderstanding. They misinterpret Wukong's tactical move as genuine mercy.
And that's what they exploit.
Precisely. Which leads us to the really interesting part.
Yeah. This is where it gets incredibly audacious. Mm. Instead of, you know, barricading the cave or preparing for a fight, the third demon comes up with this astonishing counterplan.
Mm-hmm. The famous Zeye strategy.
Lure the tiger from the mountain.
Yeah.
But how on earth do you lure Sun Wukong of all people? He's notoriously suspicious.
Well, that's the genius of it. It's not just setting a trap. It's about building this irresistible illusion, something so convincing, so appealing that the targets want to walk into it.
So it's not an ambush.
No, not at all. It's more like crafting this perfect five-star service experience, but, you know, with deadly intent.
Yeah.
Designed to completely disarm them.
Okay, let's break down the layers here because it's wild. First up, the food.
Yes, the culinary corps.
Right. 30 skilled cooks are chosen. Their job, set at these rest stops, Rupu, they're called, every, 20 or 30 lovers.
Yeah, about 6 to 10 miles apart, something like that, along the pilgrim's route.
And they're not just handing out crusts of bread. They're meticulously preparing tea and meals.
And the menu is specific, luxurious even for travelers.
Totally. Fine rice, fine flour, bamboo shoots, tea buds, fragrant mushrooms, kalan mushrooms, tofu, gluten. I mean, it's practically gourmet.
The level of detail is just, it's staggering. It shows they really thought about Tang Monk, the target. What would make a traveling monk feel comfortable, cared for?
Lull him into comfort.
Yeah.
Okay, what else? Then you've got the transport and the advance team.
The palanquin and pathfinders. 16 demons.
Yep. 8 specifically to carry this fragrant vine palanquin, Zhang Tang Jiaozi, for Tang Monk himself.
Nice touch.
And another 8 to clear the path, the Heilu, making it all seem official, safe.
And the final layer of legitimacy, the royal escort, the 3 big demon brothers themselves, including the mastermind, the third demon, they're going to personally accompany the party, oversee everything, maintain that perfect illusion of goodwill.
Wow. So they're basically putting on a massive performance.
The full production and the goal.
The deceptive destination. Guide them 400 lights west.
That's like over 130 miles.
A long way. Takes time. Builds trust.
Straight to the third demon's own city, where supposedly reinforcements are waiting.
But the real plan
is the capture, right at the city's edge. The strategy is explicitly to make them unable to look out for each other. Shouwei Buning Xiangu, isolate Tang Monk.
And those 16 demons carrying the palanquin, their name is crucial for this final move. They literally lift him away.
It's just breathtakingly detailed.
Absolutely. And the great demon's reaction when he hears this plan, he's ecstatic. Like he's woken up from a dream, the text says.
He sees the brilliance. He sees the brilliance. It's not just a trap. It's theater. Psychological warfare disguised as a favor. Every single element is designed to lower their guard.
And they don't waste any time putting it into action. It's swift, seamless.
Cooks are sent out. The palanquin team is chosen. The fancy palanquin ready to go.
And the great demon, he's smart enough to warn the other, lesser demons, right?
Yeah.
Tells them to stay hidden.
Yes, explicitly. Don't wander the mountain. Why? Because, quote, Sun Wukong is a suspicious monkey. If he sees you coming and going, he will surely grow suspicious and expose this plan.
They knew their opponent. They accounted for Wukong's nature.
Mm-hmm. Then comes the actual send-off. It's quite the performance.
The great demon leads his forces out, calls out loudly, Master Tang, today is not a red sand day. Please cross the mountain early. Basically saying, coast is clear. Safe travels.
And Tang Monk buys it completely.
Hook, line and sinker. He actually praises Wukong, thinking his disciple's power really has subdued these demons. This whole elaborate show just confirms his belief.
It plays right into his hopes, his desire for a smooth journey.
But here's the bit that just gets me. Even Sun Wukong,
yeah,
a Taiyi golden immortal, described as loyal and upright. He actually believes his own tactic, the capture and release thing.
He believes it genuinely worked. That the demons are truly subdued.
He doesn't pick up on any ulterior motives, just lets his master get into the palanquin and proceed exactly as the demons want.
It's baffling, isn't it? How could someone so powerful, so supposedly discerning, miss something this elaborate?
It really makes you wonder.
Maybe. Maybe it was his own righteousness, his belief that his actions should have a good outcome. Maybe that blinded him.
Could be. He saw fear, then this performance of submission, and just accepted it. Didn't expect this level of insidious planning.
He expected a fight, maybe, or just them running away, not this five-star treatment leading to doom.
So off they go. Pigsy's got the luggage. Sandy's following close behind.
And Wukong's out front, staff ready, scouting as always, looking for omens, good or bad, doing his job.
Meanwhile, Tang Monk is just joyfully riding in the palanquin, enjoying the trip.
And the text emphasizes how comfortable it was. Day and night, diligent service, three meals a day, satisfying, good lodging, presumably at those demonic rest stops.
And they travel the whole 400 live like this, over 130 miles of deceptive comfort.
And that entire journey is the lure perfected, right? That relentless comfort, that apparent safety.
Yeah.
It's all designed to make them drop their guard completely.
It's the ultimate Trojan horse, but made of, like, comfortable cushions and good food.
Exactly. Paved with seemingly good intentions.
And then, bam, the reveal. They finally get near the destination city.
Wukong's maybe a lot, about a third of a mile ahead of the palanquin. He sees the city.
And is literally scared into a fall.
Yeah.
Can't even get up. Just floored by terror.
What did he see?
Pure evil aura. The description is just
chilling.
A complete nightmare inversion of a city.
Give us some details.
Okay, it's piled high with demon monsters. The four gates. Wolf spirits, overseers, striped tigers, generals, white-faced leopards.
So the entire infrastructure is demonic.
Completely. Messengers are antlered deer. Street officials are foxes. Giant snakes and pythons everywhere. 1,000-foot pythons coiled around the city walls. 10,000-foot-long snakes blocking the roads.
Jeez.
Gray wolves bellowing commands, flowered leopards speaking. Even the flags and drums are monsters. Patrolling guards are mountain spirits.
It's a whole ecosystem of evil.
Even the economy.
Yeah.
Cunning rabbits run the shops. Wild boars carry burdens. It was once a heavenly imperial country, the text says. Now it's just a tiger wolf city.
Wow. The contrast with the journey they just had must have been whiplash-inducing.
Totally. From pampering to this hellscape.
And that abrupt shift just hammers home the true nature of the trap. The mask is finally off.
So while Wukong is literally stunned, reeling from this horrific sight,
the third demon makes his move.
Attacks Wukong from behind with his halberd, the Huogenfan Tianji.
Wukong just barely escapes, right? Has to use his somersault cloud.
Yeah, just gets away. But he's distracted, and that's the moment.
The 16 palanquin demons plus the three brothers.
They swoop in, surround Tang Monk, lift the whole palanquin, and carry him straight into the city.
Snap. The trap closes.
But then comes this really, really weird detail. Almost darkly funny.
Ah, yes. The post-capture care instructions.
Exactly. So Tang Monk is brought into the city. The demons inside start cheering, but orders immediately go out. Roll up flags, silence drums, no shouting or gonging.
Why the sudden quiet?
Get this.
Yeah.
Because the Great King had an order before. Not to scare Tang Monk.
Okay.
Because Tang Monk cannot stand fright. If scared, his meat will become sour and inedible.
Sour and inedible?
Yeah.
Wow, that tells you everything, doesn't it? It's horrific, but also weirdly practical from their point of view.
Totally. He's not just a prisoner. He's like the main course.
Mm.
And they want to preserve the quality.
It gives you this incredibly specific, chilling insight into their ultimate goal. It's not just about capture, it's about consumption. And apparently, terror spoils the taste. It's so bizarre. So Tang Monk gets carried into the main hall, the Golden Imperial Hall. They offer him tea and food, probably trying to keep him calm.
Keep the meat fresh.
Right. But he's just dizzy, totally overwhelmed, looking around this monstrous court and realizing he's completely alone. No relatives in sight. Isolated.